We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by the Genesis Company, coming at you Tuesday, late morning, May 9th. And the plan today for this episode is to get back into the Wolves a little bit. I got Kyle Tige from Scorm North with me. And in an effort to hit on many things Wolves offseason, we're going to do a mailbag. I put out a call for questions last week. We got a ton of them. So we're actually going to do a two-part mailbag, two separate episodes. Part one will come out on Tuesday evening, and I think part two will be out on Wednesday in part two. So the things you won't really hear us hit on are Chris Finch, Mike Conley in the point guard position, got a bunch of Nikhil Alexander Walker questions, and then just some miscellaneous different topics. So if you're looking for those things, know they're coming in the next episode. In part one, this episode, the questions we'll focus on are going to be tied more to Tim Conley, specifically, as you know, this will be a lot of off-season talk. We'll do kind of a salary cap overview just to review where the Wolves are at from a spending standpoint. Got some trade and hypothetical free agency questions. I dug into that a little bit less. I think, you know, that stuff we'll have more time to go into over the course of the off-season, but we'll hit on some of those. Also got a bunch of like run it back questions, you know, kind of focusing on the feasibility of this roster as is, what works, what could work, what are the expectations we have for it. And then if we have time, there's a handful of Anthony Edwards and Naz Reid questions. If we don't get to all those, again, we'll put those into part two. But yeah, we'll try and get that all into this episode, and anything we don't, we'll be in the next one. Kyle Tige with me. Kyle, how are you? You ready to do this?
I'm doing well, man. We got a lot of good questions, so I was just kind of perusing as you were talking there. But I think the first place to start, if you just want to get right into it, is with the Tim Conley stuff, because that seems to be kind of the most important, the freshest topic, right, to talk about. I know we have some audio, too, and then it also seems like the most relevant, because nothing you can really talk about the offseason matters before you decide, you know, who's actually calling the shots.
Right. Yeah, we've learned that over the past handful of years, as there's been many different presidents of basketball operations. And I think for, you know, both of us, when we have talked about off seasons in the past, we go off of what we understand the person in charge's, right, like tendencies to be. And we have a year of Tim Conley to go off of. And if it were to be somebody else, you know, it'd be a whole different sort of set of things. So we'll focus, you know, 95% on if it is Tim calling the shots and, you know, what we think he might be inclined to do this offseason. But the place we should start, to your point, is with the idea that there's at least somewhat of a question mark of whether or not Tim Conley is going to be the one in charge for the Wolves this year. At Media Day, he wasn't very reassuring, or not media day, end of season press conferences, it wasn't really reassuring. The quote he gave about his name coming up in the Washington job. Then he goes on WCCO radio last week with Chad Hartman and Chad kind of presses him on that again, and it's still a little bit of a floating question mark. If people haven't heard that interview with Chad, I have that here. I talked to Chad, and he's cool with us. He's cool with us playing it. So let's, just to kind of frame what the Wolves offseason is going to look like, we need to frame the idea that there is some looming doubt about who will be calling the shots. And again, if you haven't heard it and you're like, wait, what are you talking about? Doubt. I think this clip kind of illustrates some of the doubt that is out there. So again, here's Tim Connelly on with Chad Hartman on WCCO radio last week.
You met the media last week. You said, your exact quote was, "I'm pretty confident I'm going to be here." That wasn't exactly a declarative statement. So let me ask you this. Do you want to right here say without any hesitation, I am staying with the Minnesota Timberwolves no matter what? Or do you just want to be honest and say, this is a unique job, this is home, and at this point, I cannot eliminate myself from that potential job opportunity?
No, I'm just totally focused on the Timberwolves, trying to get us better. When we had we didn't do better than last year, so we got to figure out how we can make this team better. Just left the office watching draft videos, so we're all eyes are on the Timberwolves and how we can make this team better. And hopefully, next time we have this conversation, it won't be this early in the season.
Respectfully, though, that isn't really answering the question, right? I mean, you could just say that I 100% will be the Wolves president of basketball operations next year.
That's certainly the plan. That's why we came here and moved here. And again, we got a lot of unfinished business, and it's been a really fun year, both on and off the court. And we're fully committed to being a Timberwolf.
Is that the door opening the car, or is somebody tracking you down?
Yeah, it's a car. I like a dumb dad, I forgot I had the stroller for my newborn, so I have to make a quick U-turn to drop the stroller off.
Yeah, nope.
I just wanted to put that last part of their car, so it wasn't clear that I was in a car with the door ajar. You and I, we texted a little bit about this last week on, I guess, our thoughts of that interview. Where are you at in terms of what Tim said at exit interviews and that, and how, for you in your job, how do you approach the offseason? I mean, and maybe you don't, maybe you do take that to be a declarative statement. Maybe are you operating under the assumption that Tim Connelly will be the one calling the shots here? And how does his comments since the season has ended impact what you feel on that?
All right. To get back to the mailbag structure, mm-hmm. Our first question was from at CrockettBC on Twitter. What were your thoughts of the recent Tim Connelly interview on the Chad Hartman show? So, shout out to CrockettBC, because that's kind of what got this rolling. I'm trying. I'm really trying, Jennifer. I'm really trying. Over at Flagrant House yesterday, Phil Mackey and I kind of broke that audio down. Like, this is a Pruder film. Just trying to figure out, like, I keep coming back, Dane, to the fact that this man's been in the league for, like, 25 years, and anyone you talk to that's not a Wolves fan is like, he's the best. He has great relationships with agents, with players, with other execs, all that stuff, with media members. So you would think in a situation like this, and there's what we talked about at Flagrant House, was like, Chad Hartman is on WCCO, who is like the flagship partner of the Timberwolves. So that's how, you know, he probably gets that interview compared to maybe some other people in the local media. They're trying to maybe get a hold of Tim or talk to him and stuff. And it's a really good way to press him. But if you knew you were going to do that interview, you have to know that that's like the first question you're going to get, right?
That was the first question of the interview, literally. I mean, I cut it. That's the first 90 seconds of the interview, yeah.
So I'm not – we all have different lives, and I don't know what it's like to be the president of basketball operations. But, like, I'm just going to let it rip. Like, I would have preferred that maybe he was sitting in his office for that one, you know, not, like, literally at the car wash or, like, running trying to multitask. Because it's a really big question, and I don't know, man. I'm going to defer to you here because my thoughts are so tangled on this topic, but you would just think, like, hey, it would be nice if I'm trying to create a culture, a winning organization, stability, get away from the dysfunction, get away from the country club thing. Like, this is a really important question. Even if you don't think the fan base or whatever like you, you need to set some sort of like, no, I'm here. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm here for the long, I came here for a reason. Like you said, we moved here for a reason. Okay, but have you liked living here for a year? Like, that's not an answer. Like, if I was like, yeah, you know, I moved to Tulum, it's like, well, I don't like living in Tulum. So I wish he would have just come out and been, he had the opportunity at exit interviews. He had the opportunity on Chad Hartman's show to just be like, I am here. And I think he's here. I really do. I mean, I don't know if you've kind of like perused around the other stuff, but it doesn't, I don't even know if he's a candidate for the Wizards job, to be honest. You know what I mean? Like, it might just be like, they don't want him, but he's interested in, you know, getting closer to home. But I just thought overall, it's kind of a ramble. I just wish he would have been better at being like, I'm here. Let's nip this right away so we can all focus on one mission and kind of one aligned strategy moving forward. And that's with me here. That's with Finch here. Mm-hmm. That's with, you know, Ant being the focal point and all that stuff. And it was just kind of a dropped the ball in terms of eliminating any extra drama. And this franchise, man, doesn't need any more drama.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this before. The way I understand it is there's, you know, it has been a lingering thing. I think dating back a couple months now, there was serious questions in league circles whether or not Tommy Shepard would remain in charge of the Wizards. Obviously, he gets let go, and then names start trickling out as they do, and Tim's is one of those. I think through that, you know, there's some intrigue on their side to bring in Tim Connelly. And then I think, I don't know this, but naturally, I think as a human, like you said, like that's where you're from. That's where you started your career. There's probably some intrigue there as well. You would like to just have whatever it was going to be, yeah, determined before you had to speak to the media or before now, when it's time to kind of start digging in. I mean, what are we, like 5 weeks away from the draft? Like, it's kind of like go time for a president of basketball operations. And in that, and for the fan base, you would like to know what is exactly going on. I don't know exactly what is going on. I think we can just take that, as I've said the words question mark like six times. I think there is somewhat of a question mark. I don't know how big it is. I don't know how small it is. But those type of statements lead to a question mark. So I think more like productively, for our sake, we can talk about, you know, what would this look like just briefly, you know, if he does leave, because I think the fan base has some questions about that. We got questions from the Sauce03 on Twitter. If Tim Connelly leaves for Washington, what would the ramifications be? Brian Solo asked, if Tim Connelly goes to Washington, is Gupta his replacement? And to just hit those quickly, as I understand it, Connelly is under contract. So if he were to leave, yes, there would need to be some sort of compensation paid there in terms of, you know, draft picks. And maybe that's a whole negotiation. And who knows, maybe that's the reason he can't say anything, whatever. In terms of, I've got this question from a handful of people, you know, if Tim leaves, like, who would you expect to take over? And I have no idea. I don't know if it would be Gupta. My inclination would be to say, no, it wouldn't be. As from where I sit, he took significantly more of a back seat than, just like in the pecking order of the front office compared to where he was in Rosas' front office, or of course, once Rosas was gone and he was running the show. So I don't know, man. Like, in terms of, yeah, if he's gone, I think that opens up a whole can of worms, and it's really connected to the offseason and what the Wolves may or may not do. Because again, if it were somebody else in charge internally or externally, that person is going to have a different set of, you know, beliefs of what's best for this roster, right? And what we've talked about before is the idea that so long as Tim is in charge, I would be very surprised to see something that doesn't resemble, quote unquote, running it back, right? I think the likelihood that you keep the two bigs together is very high if Tim is here. And then naturally, just out of change, if it would be somebody else, there's a greater likelihood that they wouldn't be as bought into the structure of this roster, right, than Tim would be. And so that's the can of worms, right? That it then we're talking about a whole different layer of change in this. For the sake of this episode, we are going to be operating under what I think is the significantly most, I don't know, significantly, the most likely outcome or the present outcome of who runs this team, which is Tim Connelly. So we are going to operate under the assumption that that Tim is going to continue to run the show and go, like, operate within the realm of what we understand him to be. So to that end, and we can talk about Connelly a little bit throughout this, but let's do the salary cap overview sort of thing. You want to handle that question?
Oh yeah, yeah. Let me scroll through. This is probably a good way to start. So we set the table, like you said, of we're moving forward until we have a breaking news pod that differs, right? That Tim Connelly is the guy calling the shots. So we did have a question from Daniel at Large on Twitter. Can you go through a general one. Can you go through the team's salary cap and draft capital for the next couple of years? Kind of a, you know, state of the Timberwolves or state of the franchise moment here. And he was like, just think it would be a good to see the ledger before we go off the deep end with trades, free agent ideas. So as I've always said, you are like millennial Larry Kuhn when it comes to the CBA. And we can probably get into some of the new CBA stuff down the road too. But what is just their general, as it pertains to May 2023, what do the books look like? What does the structure look like for this team?
So I think the place to start is that the salary cap is $134 million. For next season. That's that line there. The Wolves have 11 players under contract for next season that add up to $144 million. So they're $10 million over the cap with four open roster spots. Those four roster spots that are open are because Naz Reid, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Jalen Noel, and Austin Rivers are all free agents. Also, Luka Garza and Matt Ryan as free agents off their two ways. But those are the four holes in the roster that you will need to replace. And from a salary cap standpoint, they're going to have roster holds on them, etc. That's a little in the weeds. But 11 players, $144 million, which is 10 over the cap. I don't think the cap, I mean, just in general in the NBA, the line you want to be looking at is the luxury tax line. That's more functions as a cap in the NBA in this day and age, just because a lot of teams aren't going to spend in the luxury tax. I think particularly with the Timberwolves, when we know they're going to certainly be in the tax a year from now, I think we can draw a real line in the sand for this summer, assuming that they won't go into the tax, because if they are in the tax this year and they're definitely in the tax next year, now you're in that repeater tax thing and you're paying Golden State Warriors type money in tax allocation. So for the sake of this, 162, that's the luxury tax line. I think we should view that as kind of the spending limit for this team. 162, got $144 million on your books already. That means you got $18 million in space below the tax with four open roster spots. So that's what we should look at. $18 million below the tax. And then you have those four players that are free agents, Naz, Nikhil, Jalen, and Austin. And you go, okay, 18, like, kind of figure Jalen Noel is going to be gone. Austin Rivers, probably a minimum player, even if he's back, you know, kind of cross those guys out and you go, all right, 18, like 18 is probably around what Naz and Nikhil would cost, right? Wouldn't you agree with that? Like, I'm kind of thinking 12 for Naz, 6 for Nikhil, something like that, within that range.
I still firmly believe that Naz Reid's contract is going to come in lower than what we maybe thought when he was like yamming on people in February.
Right. And the reason I say 12 is that the mid-level line is about 12 and a half. I think that's kind of where I assume Naz will wind up, somewhere in that sort of range. But again, you go, okay, so even call it 12 for Naz, 6 for Nikhil, that's your 18. You're like, cool, we are good. That's 13 players. You're right up against the tax. But the factor I think we need to really think about is not just Naz and Nikhil. You also have to factor in the mid-level exception, which the Wolves have to be able to spend. That's what they use. The mid-level is something you can use to spend over the cap. It's about $12.5 million this year. That's what they used on Kyle Anderson last season, right? They were over the cap, signed Kyle with the mid-level. That's who they were able to bring in. So I think we're kind of getting to this point where you need to choose two out of three things between Nas, N'Keal, and the mid-level. Now, there's maybe a line I just want to, like, talk about here that could get you to all three. I think that's what Wolves fans want to hear. How do we use the mid-level? How do we re-sign Nas? And how do we re-sign N'Keal? That's the, you want the goop to shit, right? Like, to finagle that all together to be able to happen. And the way I think you can do that and be close to the tax, slightly below it, is if you waive Taurean Prince, who's on a non-guaranteed contract for next season for $7.7 million. You waive Jordan McLaughlin, or you don't pick up his team option for $2.3 million. And Nate Knight also has a $1.9 million team option. Taurean Prince, 7.7, plus Jordan McLaughlin, 2.3, plus Nate Knight, 19. That's 12 right there. So that kind of buys you, in a way, if you let go of all three of those guys, a way to get Nas for his number, re-sign N'Keal, which, and maybe that N'Keal number, I don't know. I'm just guessing right there. But in theory, if you get rid of Prince, McLaughlin, and Knight, you could be right at or around the tax by bringing back Nas, bringing back N'Keal, and using the mid-level exception. Now, maybe you can't use the mid-level to its full 12.5. Maybe you got to do like a $9 million contract in that. You don't have to use the full mid-level. But that's kind of the way I'm looking at it, is I think you potentially could bring back Nas, bring back N'Keal, and use the mid-level exception, and to stay underneath the tax, waive Taurean Prince, Jordan McLaughlin, and Nate Knight. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that was a word salad, I think, for some, but it's important to listen to because it does kind of set, like, this is, you really do have to understand the Excel spreadsheet, right, of the payroll for this team moving forward, because we have so many questions that were submitted about trades and free agents on stuff, and it's like, okay, as much as, and I always try to comp my love for professional sports to just day-to-day life, but at the end of the day, man, this is still, you have a budget, right? And there's only so, if you've spent and allocated a bunch of your money to, you know, two really big guys and a little over here and a couple, you know, couple bags of money for Ant and Jaden, like, you really do run out of resources, or your budget becomes pretty limited. So I think you painted a pretty good picture that, like, it, there is a feasible way, is what you're saying, right? That you could still keep Nas, still keep Nah, and use that mid-level to kind of, again, not just completely run it back, right? Because running it back is essentially, you know, the pseudo, the same rotation, the same guys. Still gives you a little, I mean, everyone loves in the offseason, you want new, right? You want change. So that mid-level is, as you're saying, is on the table. And I know I mentioned this earlier, but we'll get into it, I think, you and I, throughout the summer as we learn more. But I don't know about you, but I've, like, started to nerd out a little bit and just read every new article about that new CBA that was recently agreed upon like a month ago. And I don't think even teams really fully understand it yet. But that is going to be something for the number of nerds out there like myself or you that we're going to be talking about almost every podcast this summer, because there are some ramifications of this new CBA that are going to make it, like, damn near impossible to do what the Wolves might be trying to do.
Yeah, and it's even just a difference of a million or 2 million here in terms of what an exception is, or what the cap number is, or what the tax number is. Like, the Wolves were actually a good example of how that matters, right? Because even 1 or 2 million pushes you into the tax, right? Or keeps you below the tax. And again, to just kind of hit that point home, people are like, oh, you know, A-Rod and Laurie are rich, or owners, pay the tax, whatever, whatever. Like, I would be saying that if we didn't know that next season's tax number is going to be so high, and part of the salary cap is this repeater tax, and the idea that you don't want to be in the luxury tax for multiple years for a list of reasons, but namely because it would be, you know, super expensive. The one other thing I want to say with the luxury tax before we take a first break is it doesn't need to be like a hard line. You can start the season in the tax by like 800K. You know, you're not a tax team then, right? Like, you can shed that in the middle of the season. So I think that might be the, if I just had to guess where it goes, like maybe you're right around that number, maybe you're slightly above it, and you find a way to get under it during the middle of this season. But it really is a game of a million here, a million there, and it's why, you know, to the Nas point, which we'll get into later this episode or the next one, of like, that's why they're pinching on these numbers, right? That's why 10 would be a lot better than 12 for Nas, or 9, right? It's that couple million here or there. So that'll kind of frame what our view of this and our talking about the trades and free agency and stuff throughout the rest of this episode. I do want to grab our first break here, Kyle, and then we can jump kind of more into these trade, free agency hypotheticals and other things related to Conley and the salary cap as well, if we want to get into those. But our first break, we'll be back with Kyle. Today's show is brought to you by Land and Lore. And did you know that research shows looking tired negatively affects your ability to be successful? As if life wasn't hard enough, right? But a study in the Sleep Journal found that individuals who were perceived as tired were less approachable than others. So good luck getting that raise, that girl or guy or that prospect you're trying to land if people don't want to be around you. But don't worry, Land and Lore has you covered. At Land and Lore, they created products designed to wake your face up. So if you spent all night watching reruns of Ant putting it on Gabe Vincent, or Pat Bev dancing on the scorer's table, they got you covered. And as fans of the Timberwolves, they know life isn't full of highlights, so they have one for you. Use promo code 20CAVEMAN at checkout on Amazon.com to get 20% off their two best items, the face cleanser and moisturizer. That's 20CAVEMAN for 20% off Land and Lore face cleanser and moisturizer when you purchase on Amazon. Today's show is brought to you by Falling Knife Brewing Company, and we wanted to let you know that Falling Knife is having their all-day outdoor brewery festival called Open Season 23 this Saturday, May 13th from 1 to 10 p.m. I'm going to head over there to check out the block party setup where the Falling Knife guys are not only releasing three new bottles, but also having live music all day from 90s-ish cover bands. Smile Like You Mean It will be performing The Killers, Pleaser performing Weezer, Panic at the Costco performing Blink-182, Nirvana performing Nirvana, and Heartless performing Heart, along with DJ Truck Stash performing between all the sets. So come out to Northeast, wear some Wolves gear, and hang out at Falling Knife Brewing all afternoon. We love the Falling Knife crew, and I'd love for you to see their setup on one of the biggest days of the year for them. Again, that's cover bands from your younger years all day at Falling Knife Brewing Company this Saturday, May 10th from 1 p.m. to 10 p.m., see you there. I'll probably be wearing a Nasri shirt. All right, we're back with Kyle Teige from Score North. Kyle, the next kind of section we have here, I labeled it a bunch of different questions. We can grab a few of them. Just trade / free agency hypotheticals. Do you have one you want to start with?
Yeah, so I'm looking at the same sheet we had, but we've set the Tim Conley thing, right? We said that we believe on May 9th that man's going to be making the decisions moving forward. Until we learn otherwise, and you've kind of laid out the financial setup. So I think we're in a good foundation here. So I was hopping around our Google Doc, but I kind of want to go back to a question earlier. Do you, this is from Danny Husk.
Okay.
Because it falls into the trades and free agency stuff. Do you think that based on our salary cap discussion, do you think that it's possible that the grand plan that Tim Conley had when he took the job last summer was always to trade Karl-Anthony Towns this summer? And he listed two reasons. One, his contract grows by a little over $13 million next summer. And then Tim believing, maybe, that you can't win a championship with a center that isn't like a plus defender, based on his experiences, you know, in the league and having good defenders and rim protectors and stuff. So that would kind of kick off our transactions and chaos and notifications and Woj bombs summer. But do you think that was part of the plan? Do you think that when making the Rudy Gobert trade, the exit door was always, well, if we need to recoup assets or the fit is wonky, that we'll move the guy that probably has more value than what I think a lot of fans would want to do, and that's just cut the cord on the Gobert experiment?
Yeah, I mean, look, man, it's like all of these front offices, like, this is what they do. They have these conversations like you and I have once a month. They have them daily, right? And they have them way smarter than we do, because they're way smarter and they have way more details and they have way more resources and stuff like that. And I mean that to be on the proverbial whiteboard. They got a million different paths, right? That they look at to consider from a, you know, a 1 year standpoint, a 2 year, 3 year, 5 year, whatever it might be. And it would be irresponsible to not have, if you're making all these different paths, not have a, I don't even know if it's a break glass in case of emergency one, but a pivot, a significant pivot. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all kind of aligned in this, that if a significant pivot is coming, it would, one, be to break up the double big idea, because whatever, they tried it. And if they believe, which I don't think they do, but if and when they did believe that it wouldn't work, the pivot would be Carl, right? For a handful of different reasons, because he's kind of at that time in his career, but also from a salary standpoint of the number on his contract jumping. I think that's what the really interesting part of this kind of unfortunate conversation to have about Carl is. It's a business conversation, right? About the numbers, about the money, and about needing to build something big picture. And the salary jump for him that doesn't happen this year. This year he's going to make $36 million, and then he goes up into that 50 the next year, 54, 58, 62. Those are his numbers going forward. And I really just think about this again. He stripped down all emotions, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, credit to Carl for being here. But again, just from like a business standpoint, if that is on your whiteboard as a potential path, that path would be significantly easier to navigate if you took it now, right? When Carl's number's 36 rather than in the 50s. Simply from a standpoint, right? I think about it from a super simple standpoint of like matching that salary, right? If it's 36, now you're more talking about, you don't necessarily have to bring a max player back in that deal. It could kind of be like the Gobert trade where you get, you know, a handful of like good role players, Pat Bev's, Beasley's, Vando's, that sort of thing. You could kind of compile that together in four players and get up to 36. I think once he's in the 50s, now you're talking about a max player would have to come back, which on one hand, people are like, sweet, like a max player, you know, coming back onto this team, that'd be great. But what type of max player is that? Is it more of a depressed asset in some sort of way? And I think that comes back to what's your primary goal if you're wanting to trade Carl, are you trying to get back players immediately, win now, right? Like, or as part of your motivation, draft capital to get back. So as for drafting players in the future, you're limited on draft capital, or just as chips to be able to be traded in future trades, which they're super limited on, of course. So I think it's just a really complicated conversation in that Carl is the staple of the franchise, a pillar of the franchise for the past decade. But from a financial standpoint, yeah, you're looking at this, and I don't know how you couldn't be if you're Tim Connelly in the front office considering that pivot at some point down the line. I think what really complicated it is the fact that Carl had such a broken up season due to the injuries. If he would have played, you know, 75 games and Rudy played 75 games and the end result was kind of the feeling of how it feels now, right? Then maybe you can get to that pivot point this offseason. I get the sense that given all those excuses, mostly legitimate, that you have, that it would just be too soon to make that pivot. But yeah, I think it's on their whiteboard. I don't know how it couldn't be.
And if it's not, it's a failure. Because I think of like the NFL draft, and I just, like, you see those rooms full of 90 people. I have no idea what they all do. But they basically have like one of those charts where it's like, if this happens, then we do this. And if this happens, then we do this. So, and actually literally being, I remember way back in the day when I was like working for the Lynx, and the Lynx, I would like stumble into the Lynx front. Like, they have those whiteboards. Like, it's a real thing. They just have whiteboards upon whiteboards with every person's, you know, name, social security number, and everything in the league that they can kind of move the magnets around. So I don't know if it was as specific as maybe the question is. It's like they referred to Carl as the break glass in case of emergency thing, but I do think that was probably a conversation that was had, because like you said, these teams are planning out multiple years ahead, and that's why this new CBA is going to kind of throw a wrench into that just because you had kind of built out your plans moving forward. And now you're basically being shifted and forced. And that's, I don't know if you heard this. This was on NBA Countdown the other night, but Woj even mentioned that he expects this summer to be very, very active in terms of trades because you're going to have so many teams that are looking at their finances. And it's like, we can't, I think Woj referred to it as you can't have the third star. Right. Like, you know, we want to put that third star in a different market and we want to break it up, like you said, into smaller pieces that we can maybe, you know, cut or move or whatever, because it's going to get harder and harder in the league once these salaries, I mean, everything's going up, right?
Well, the price of the eggs tax. Is going up. It's the tax. I mean, that's the reason for the third star is that you, so many teams, that's the way they've been building. And it's like, okay, if it works and we have our three stars, then we get up into the tax and that's fine at that point. But now the main thing, or a main thing from the new CBA, is how much more painful it is going to be in that tax, particularly if it is for multiple seasons, not only from a dollars and cents standpoint, but in terms of spending power. So to the Wolves, you are on your way very obviously into exactly what Woj is saying you can't do. You got two players on Supermaxes and Ant on his way to a rookie max. And if he makes All-NBA, that designated max where it's up to 30%. I mean, that's about as expensive of a three max player situation as you could possibly have. So if that's the word, as Woj would know better than I would, of course, you know, yes, you have to be thinking about these sort of things. You have to be thinking about a pivot, whether it be now. It doesn't need to be now, right? Ant's contract doesn't kick in until 2024, 25. Cat's raise doesn't kick in until 24, 25. Jaden doesn't get his raise until then. So it's this weird, like, it's not immediate, but it's coming situation that, I don't know, I should do some more research into, like, looking at past times, like maybe Dame in Portland when he signed his Supermax thing, and it was like the multiple years down the road like Cats was, how those teams operated. Point being, it's going to be complicated, and you need to nurture your spending accordingly, or make your moves accordingly.
And again, I go back to the numbers nerds. It's going to be the prevalent conversation moving forward.
Yeah.
Because we are now less than a year out, we believe, from when the ownership change will actually officially happen and there'll be no more layaway plan. And we don't know if new ownership is willing to pay the tax, right? Because paying the tax is one thing. Like, paying a penalty is one thing, but you're also then not receiving tax payments. So it's kind of like a double FU plus. And again, going back to this new CBA and stuff, one term you're going to hear all the time now on NBA Twitter or any podcast you listen to is this term second apron, because that's one of the new kind of wrinkles of this CBA. And in the past, if you go over the luxury tax or whatever, you pay a big penalty, right? You pay a multiplier or whatever, pay the repeater tax. Well, now that like second apron starts limiting you, like you don't get a mid-level or you can't trade future draft picks so far into the future. So again, like some of that stuff, I can't take back my head around.
Yeah, same. But another one, you can't take back more money. Like, there's a lot of things that seem small, but piled up together are, I mean, that's literally the goal, or it's the goal of it, right? Is to disincentivize Clippers and Warriors type spending. That is like the plan. And while the Timberwolves, you would not associate with those teams in California, like, it's almost not about California. It's about how the cost of your roster is growing. And it's kind of hurting teams that are have effectively like internally grown, you know, players like the Wolves have with Ant, who's a no-brainer max contract. Jaden, who's a, you know, no-brainer 20 million plus player. Like, it's kind of unfortunate timing to be where the Wolves are at. From a CBA standpoint, or it's about to be, if that makes sense. Let's grab one of these. Let's grab one of the hypothetical ones. I don't know. You want to do a trade one, or are you more like a free agency one?
Let's do a trade one, and I'll kind of loop them all in. But shout out to Wim Nessens, the Colossal Wolf, and who else do I want to pick? And this is Minnesota Sports, all on Twitter. Basically, just a variety of different questions. I don't want to get too specific, but like one of them was, you know, when you've been talking about with Britt specifically, like Rudy making it harder for Ant and Cat to drive, like what are your thoughts on maybe a Miles Turner? He's been kicked around, you know, for years being associated with Minnesota. He signed a contract extension, I think, this in the season. Another one was like thoughts on a potential Ben Simmons trade. And then just I picked this one, but would you like Dylan Brooks? Question mark. You know what I mean? Just like, so some of those guys, I don't want to go specifically into each one because I don't want to waste 5 minutes on a Miles Turner trade if Indy has no plan on trading him. But could you see it being one of those situations where they move on from a, you know, they wanted to have this rim protecting guy like a Gobert, and it's like, that's not working, personality, fit, whatever, and we shift him for just a different type of rim protector like a Miles Turner?
Yeah, it's interesting more from a like a discussion idea than like a likelihood one, right? Like I longtime listeners of me know that I like way back was of the mind, which is kind of it's funny in light of how I feel about the double big experiment right now, but like, you know, 3 years ago I was super on the moving Carl to the four and bringing in another big to put next to him. My main thing was another big who could one. My biggest thing was I wanted to take Carl out of the main pick and roll defensive responsibilities, which Rudy does, right? You know, I never thought Carl's like to reach his defensive ceiling. I always thought it was going to be not in like as the five or not in drop coverage, right? So a name I really focused on was Miles Turner back then because I liked the idea of Carl not being your drop center. And the idea of Turner being able to defend the rim, but also be able to spread the floor. That's what Turner can do that Rudy can't. Not that Turner's necessarily a better player for sure, but it would very much shift the whole kind of landscape of the floor from an offensive standpoint without shifting the defensive landscape, which I think, if you think about it, like you kind of liked the defense this season. It worked well with an elite rim protector and Rudy in the drop there, and Carl worked well enough off ball and could potentially grow there as he gets healthier. So it's like, to me, and you know, maybe it isn't from a trade, but like the general idea of like adding another big to this, whether it's a third big in the Nas role if Nas doesn't come back, or eventually down the line when they do pivot, the second big next to Carl, I would still like to be a player of the Miles Turner archetype who defends the rim at a level similar to, arguably better than Rudy now does, while also being able to spread the floor. You could play five out with him. You could play pick and pop. So to answer Wim's question, yes, I would still be intrigued by that. What's the feasibility of that? I don't know. So I'm more thinking about, as we talk about adding other players along the way, and if it's just a free agent, like one of these questions was, you know, just like kind of minimum level players if Nas is gone. Like, even someone like Mike Muscala for like the minimum, right? Like,
here we go, baby. Offseason talk is in.
No. I'm just like, that's what I would, if you don't have Nas, I would want to have more that type of center that can offensively allow you to spread the floor. Muscala is not going to bring you the rim protection anywhere near Turner's ability, but just like that. I still think the dream type of center next to Carl, in my opinion, is somebody like Miles Turner. That would be, if they made a Rudy trade, which I absolutely don't think they would, I would be much more interested in a Miles Turner than a Ben Simmons, right? Whole Ben Simmons question, that one's super loaded, but it's interesting. It is.
No, the Ben Simmons one from at the Colossal Wolf is interesting only because you start to strip away just the like trade and you start to think about like the context or like the narrative, right? Like, the Brooklyn Nets are where Ben Simmons he doesn't play, but that's lives. Where Ben Simmons, I guess, collects paychecks. But, you know, Karl-Anthony Towns is from that area. Yeah. That Brooklyn Nets team seems like a team now that's kind of, I wouldn't say on the rise, but I think they did pretty well in the Kevin Durant trade.
Sure.
Anytime you give up Kevin Durant, you're going to lose the trade. But to get Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson and those picks that they got, and they might be like, okay, their owner has shown no propensity to want to rebuild. Like, they want to be good. So
yeah, if you had Ben Simmons, like that's, if I'm Brooklyn, right? Like I am trying, assuming you're Brooklyn, you're like, all right, Ben is not going to happen here. You are going out to try and get another player who makes similar money to Simmons. And that has become or is more of a depressed asset than they used to be. And to that end, in ways, Rudy and Carl both fit that, right? Like, Rudy and Carl's value today is not what it was 2 years ago or a year ago, right? But the feasibility from the Wolves side, that's a whole different question. It would look so desperate, I think, to be like, all right, this didn't work. We're going to go get Ben Simmons, the even more desperately dysfunctional type of player. But it's interesting. It would be the way to swap out max players and recoup value, right? If Ben Simmons was the main piece.
Yeah, because you're getting picks back in that deal.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? Because one of those guys is an all-NBA guy and the other one just lives in Calabasas during the season.
Again, kind of like the Miles Turner part, I don't mean this from a literal, like, that would be the swap, but to think about how you could move Rudy or how you could move Kat, as clearly hundreds of people who sent us questions are interested in that idea. We bring those up to be like, particularly the Simmons one, of like, if it's also a goal to recoup assets in a major way, you're getting a pretty broken asset back in that trade. That's just the nature, given how much the money would be, or at least that's kind of my read on that part of it.
And listen, I know after a while cheering for or following, covering, cheering for a certain player, you kind of get bored with them or maybe frustrated. But if you are frustrated by whatever Karl-Anthony Towns does that frustrates you, maybe changing his voice in a podcast or whatever, just wait till you have Ben Simmons on your team, because that man changes a lot of different things. None of them are production on the court. So that was a good question. Also, too, I'm just kind of throwing this one in there now because it's so far been the one rapid fire here that is going to be talked about a lot because it's the simplest, as you said, max contract player for max contract player. Mm-hmm. I don't like the Ben Simmons idea because, as Tim Connelly did smartly say at exit interviews, everything we do moving forward is about how it fits around Anthony Edwards. Mm-hmm. And does Ben Simmons fit around Anthony Edwards? Actually, maybe kind of nicely back in like when he was, you know, playing in Australia, but he doesn't play. And I don't want any of that extra stuff. Like, I want to eliminate, after 34 years of cheering for this team, like, I want to eliminate that stuff. That's the ugly stuff. That's drama, the, you know, all that stuff. Another player that would be,
can I say one more thing on the Ben Simmons part? Because similar to like in the Turner time again, like 3 years ago, when we were talking, when this roster was building, right? These are the type, you kind of knew that eventually this team was going to go after another $30-ish million player. And that's why we're talking about Miles Turner. That's why we talked about Ben Simmons back then. And a reason I was really big on Ben Simmons again 3 years ago was I thought Ben Simmons like 3 years ago was the best perimeter defender in the NBA. And I looked at the Wolves roster and I looked at Karl-Anthony Towns as the tent pole of it. And it was extremely glaring, obvious need to me to have an elite, elite perimeter defender. What I think has changed, outside of all Ben Simmons' crap, is the fact that the Wolves have one of those now in Jaden McDaniels. Yeah. And that, to me, would massively decrease the main thing I would be interested in Ben Simmons. But anyways, continue.
Well, and also, too, if you watch any of the playoffs right now, which I want to get into maybe in part two, just kind of looking at how the playoffs have evolved in the second round and comparing it to the Wolves, like, no good team in 2023 is going to have Ben Simmons and Rudy Gobert on the floor at the same time.
Yeah, right.
Like, you just can't have two non-shooters.
Yes.
But what I was trying to circle back is, like, Ben Simmons and all his, as you eloquently said, crap, I don't want that around Ant. The same goes for what is a popular one-for-one swap would be, like, the Karl-Anthony Towns for Trae Young stuff.
Right,
you know, Trae doesn't work in Atlanta, you flip it. I don't know. I think Trae Young's a pretty good player. I probably like him a little more than most, but that's, why would you want that next to this kid that you're trying to build everything around?
Yeah. And you know, and then you got to look at the rest of the roster too. I mean, you got Mike Conley and all those sort of, I mean, that's why this stuff is hard, right? Like, and it's kind of a case to be made for the running it back, right? Is that any sort of major shift that you were to make of the Turner, Simmons, Young, whatever, there'll be other names that are floated over the course of the summer. You got to remember, like, the displacement value that we just experienced with Rudy Gobert, right? Of a new player in, and it's disorienting, and it takes a long time to get on a track. So if you were to make some sort of Kat or Rudy trade, you're bringing in somebody else who is even less acclimated with the situation than those two are. And maybe they're not both centers, and maybe that part's great, whatever. But I get that part of the wanting to run it back and not wanting to make another shift, because I get the part about Ant, wanting to build around Ant, wanting him to go to the playoffs consistently, wanting to have him be a good environment, and a big trade messes that up to some extent, even if to some extent it's beneficial. To hit on let's grab another break here, and then let's hit on a couple like specific, we got some specific free agent questions. Yep. About what these guys can potentially do this summer. So let's hit another break, and then we'll get to that. Let's actually do our prize picks segment live. We're gonna pick a couple guys. I picked two guys. I don't know how many you did from the Nuggets Suns layout and on Prize Picks tonight in that matchup. What stood out to you on the board at Prize Picks there?
My first one was Jamal Murray over 32.5 points and assists. I thought Jamal Murray was pretty bad in game four. It was pretty much Jokic and no other running mates. And I just think Jamal Murray has he's pretty competitive against Devin Booker. I mean, him and those two kind of have a thing going. So I think back home, game five in Denver, Jamal Murray responds. And I mean, he might get 33 points alone. So adding in the assists is pretty easy. So 32.5 points and assists over for Jamal Murray.
I'll do my two quick, and then I'll give you the second one. I'm thinking about this one from an adjustment standpoint off of the last game, which is I think you need to load up more on KD and Booker and force, you know, they did that in the second half, right? They're bringing that Harden double, that double we saw in Ant all the time. Just get it the hell out of their hands as much as possible. And to that end, I like KD's assist number is 6. Booker's was 8. KD looks a little bit more willing to pass than Booker does. So I'm going to take KD over 6 assists. And then Jokic's assist number was just 9. I think that's under 10 because, like, hey, 53 last game. Like, you know, they're not doubling him. They're you know, they're letting him be a scorer. Well, he also had 11 assists while he had 53 points in that game. So I think you see a little bit more lurker, doubler on Jokic because you can't let him go off again, I think, particularly at home. So taking the assists for KD and Jokic over there.
This one sucks, but I'm going to do DeAndre Ayton over 12.5 points.
I saw that one too. I like that, yeah.
It's only because, I don't know if you saw this, by the way, he nicknamed himself like Dominatin or something. It was one of the, like, if you don't like Karl Anthony Towns, man, go look at some other centers and the things they say around the league. Like, he is a weirdo. Anyway, 12.5 is just too low for a guy that I know they've really enjoyed playing Landale a little bit more. That I think they got him from Atlanta, but they need Ayton to play as many minutes as possible because he's still their best hope to slow down Jokic at all. And 12.5 is just, I mean, that's, you know, a couple baskets and a couple free throws. So they need him if they have any chance to win one of these games in Denver. They need Ayton to have, you know, 14 and 12. So 12.5 is just really low. I think he only scored 8 points in game 4 and 4 in game 3. But he needs to be on the court if Phoenix has any chance. So I liked over 12.5 points for him.
I like those too. PrizePicks.com or the PrizePicks app. If you do not have an account and you want to play for the playoffs, you can sign up using the promo code Dane at PrizePicks. That'll give you a $100 sign up bonus. We'll take an actual ad break here and then we'll be back to take a couple more mailbag questions before we wrap up part one. Today's show is brought to you by the Game Time app, and Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for all the sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. I went to a concert last week, and the whole process of knowing where to go to get the tickets, it was stressful because the last time I went to a concert, it was a mess trying to get the tickets from the third-party website onto my phone. But with the Game Time app, I felt confident even last minute that I purchased my tickets at a fair rate, and that's because of their best price guarantee. And then with the app, it was easy to just use my phone and get into the concert I paid for, no confusion. So if you're looking for tickets to a Lynx game, a Twins game, or a concert this summer, check out the Game Time app. You'll get images of your seats when you buy, so you know what to expect when you arrive. You can buy tickets in a matter of seconds, 2 taps and you're set, and tickets are sent directly to your phone. So no need to dig through your emails and click on a link here or there. You can just snag tickets without stress with the Game Time app. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code DANEMORE for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and use the code DANEMORE, all one word, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, Kyle, let's hit on one or two of these kind of free agent signing type ones. You mentioned the Dylan Brooks one. I'll read this question. This one was from This Is MN Sports. With Pat Bev gone, it seemed like the team suffered for not having a player with an edge. Does that ring true to you as someone who covered the team closely? If so, who are some players they could acquire to give the team more of a jerk factor outside of Dylan Brooks? I'm going to start by saying I don't think Dylan Brooks would be that terrible. Like, everybody would be like, no, hell no.
Thank
and I think
you.
That's what everyone is
saying.
Thank
you. This is
going
to get us roasted, but I was, that's in my notes too.
If you
like,
believe
are
that,
sure?
If you believe that, like, you actually need the jerk factor, as he said, a lot of other guys that are like that, as we kind of saw with like Pat Bev, are very limited elsewhere. And like, Dylan Brooks is too audacious of a shooter. I get that, but it's not like he has no offensive game, right? He would give you another perimeter defender in addition to Jaden. And I'm sure there would be chaos and everything that would come with that. But as I was going through the list of free agents, like, and we talk about depressed assets, like, I don't know, you might be able to get him for not that much money. The other guys I put down that I felt fit that, I think Bruce Brown would be awesome on this team. I think that's probably your full mid-level exception. So what's the functionality there? Javon Carter is another one that I brought up. And then Joe Ingles also. There's another question. I don't know who that was from. It was from Duba Snacks. The Wolves need for shooting is obvious. Who are the best free agents available in that? Joe Ingles is an elite shooter. Obviously, he's getting older, the knee and everything. He's also got some of that jerk factor to him as well. So that was a few of the guys I put down there as well. Did I already say Javon Carter? That would be another one there as well. You got any?
Yeah. The Dylan Brooks one, again, that would all depend on, you know, role that you agree to, right, when talking to him. And then also just what is he going to demand? Because if you get Dylan Brooks on a really cheap salary, you know, I remember Pat Bev a couple weeks ago on his pod, and we love Pat Bev. Like, retire the number in the rafters. But he was saying, like, well, I'm hoping to get $15 million this summer.
Yeah.
You know, like, that, if as much as I'd like to have Pat Bev back, if that's what he's looking for, we've already gone over that. That's literally not possible.
Right.
So if you can get another guy, like,
you want cheap jerk factor. That's where the Wolves are at.
I want a cheap jerk. Yeah, for sure. So anyone that's like, can fit this. And also, the Wolves are already kind of hated, right? Like, people don't like Gobert, people don't like Carl. Like, they're kind of this weird pseudo, they're not on the level of the Grizzlies, but kind of this bad boy, everyone hates them, whatever. So like, just lean into that, bring in more jerks, and just, it would, I think he would have a good role too. I mean, his shot is weird, both aesthetically and percentage wise, but he also is, you know, going back to what we've talked about all season. If this team believes their identity is being really good defensively, because you've seen what your two, you know, young foundational pieces and Ant and Jaden can do, and maybe you still have Rudy and you got those other guys, just leaning into more defense. A lineup with Dylan Brooks and Ant and Jaden and Rudy and Josh Minot, like that team is going to probably, teams will probably just give up points. Like they'll just, like, their point total will go down, just those five on the floor. So, yeah, there was a couple other questions too, just in general. Do you have any other free agents off the, I like the Joe Ingles one. The Bruce Brown one to some might not sound sexy, but he has been a key cog in what they're doing in Denver this season. But do you have any other ones that off the top of your head? I haven't really thought about too many free agents yet, but because someone did say they looked at the free agent pool. This isn't a great free agent class, by the way. But I think gone are the days of, like, you know, big free agent classes. It's all more about trades or going and getting those Joe Ingles, Bruce Browns, Kyle Anderson types for the mid-level and building that way, and then making your big splashes via trades.
And even with, like, the minimum. I mean, partly some of these names that I'm going to be talking about are, they're going to be low salary guys. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that the free agent pool isn't great, and also the fact that the Wolves don't have much financially to work with. I mean, it changes it a little bit. Like, it doesn't need to be a minimum player if you don't bring back Nas, right? Or if you don't use them, whatever. Like, we talked about what the factors are before. But I think the shooting, I mean, I'm looking from, like, a bench standpoint of what you would want to add to this team. And I think Finch said this to some extent at exit interviews too. You want shooting. You want more perimeter defense. And then also, I think you want more zip to the basket, right? Like a richer man's Jalen Noel. Like, those are the three bench areas that you're, you know, you're trying to check that box. The shooting one, I think, is a little bit easier, again, particularly if you don't think about, if you don't have Nas in the picture. You got Trey Lyles, who, you know, would probably be a better stretch big than Nas is. You lose a lot of the other Nas stuff. Muscala can shoot it from deep. We're talking, I mean, that's a minimum player there. Ingles, again, is one for obvious reasons, the Utah connection in terms of a shooter. I also think Terrence Ross is a really good shooter. That like, again, for a minimum type player, those were the shooter ones that came up to me. I think a name as people are seeing a lot more in the playoffs too is Gabe Vincent. That's not going to be a minimum player. And that would be, you know, that's where you're talking about more mid-level exception. But from a shooter standpoint, that's kind of what I came to. Defensively, Bruce Brown, we mentioned. Dante DiVincenzo, he's probably like a full mid-level type guy, I would guess, in more of that defensive realm. It's hard to find zip-to-the-basket Jalen Noel type guys. There's not a lot of that on the free agent board that I was intrigued by.
I would take anyone from the Heat, you know, like any of the undrafted guys, like Cody Martin, Caleb Martin, Kyle Martin, Steve Martin, like any of the Martins would be good because they just seem to know how to play basketball. Yeah. Okay, so that was kind of a free agents thing. Again, I don't want to, if we get two more and people keep hearing Dante DiVincenzo, people are going to start drinking. So let's go pivot for a sec, if you don't mind, to like this idea of the run it back and what it actually means.
Yeah.
There are 64 questions in the Google Doc here, but I thought this one was cool because I also like, just again, shout out to everyone that listens to these pods or what I do with Phil. So this is from at Terry Louie. Says, good day, Dane. I'm Terry from Ghana in Africa. Been a Wolves fan for close to 8 years. Love and follow your stuff. My question is simple. How do I not lose my mind if the Wolves don't alter the two bigs thing this summer? Because the times I stay up to watch their games are pretty wild considering their time zones. I need to see something else.
Yeah. I mean, I think a handful of questions were about this, right? Also, Zachary Felker had one where he said, what would the team have to do to make you want to see the two bigs line up for a third season, right? Like, what would have to happen this next year that you're like, yeah, run it back again, right? Or keep this identity. And I think that's the main thing, right? Is I want to see significant and consistent identity of what I called Nas week, right? Like that week of the road trip where they effectively stayed big and imposed their big identity for 48 minutes throughout games. And you see that consistently throughout the season. I think if you believe in that, and maybe part of that for you is having Nosby back because you've actually seen that work before. Being able to see that would be big for me. And then also significant growth between Ant and Rudy. I think to Terry from Ghana, like, you have to have belief in that, that those things, that that identity can become a consistent thing night to night. And you have to believe that the Ant and Gobert connection can be better. I'm really even like leaving out the Carl and Rudy part of it. Like, that weirdly, like, the pairing of just them is not the biggest part to me. The biggest part to me is Ant and Rudy. And then having an identity and maintaining it. Like, I think that is what, if 12 months from now we're having a conversation and Carl's contract is about to elevate and Ant's, it's going to kick in and all this and that, and you're like, have to keep this identity, have to keep this group together, is because we believe in that identity and we believe in Ant and Rudy.
This is another one, just under the Twin Towers kind of mentality.
Let's just push the like Ant and Nas ones to the next episode. So we'll just wrap it up here with this part. Yeah.
Just a little production meeting on the fly. At Jay Stein 2. This is a good one. I want to pick your basketball brain on this. Can you talk about what Cat can add to his game that helps him beat smalls that will be guarding him next season in a playoff run? As you kind of watch the playoffs now, teams just at the end of the day do go small, second half, fourth quarter, those types of things. We've seen it a lot with Carl not being able to kind of punish those matchups, draw a lot of charges, you know, just do things. So from a basketball standpoint, purely on the court, what do you think would be like, I don't know, the biggest thing that he could add to his game or just focus on this summer, knowing that that's the expectation of what he'll see next season?
Lower body strength. That's the biggest thing. I'm looking at the ability.
Leg day.
Yeah, for real. And I mean, right, to Carl's credit, I mean, part of that is understandable. He was had an immobilized leg for months, right? And I think we saw, I mean, an issue I've seen with Carl over the, you know, even past 2-3 years since he trimmed down post-Tibbs days is the ability to get and maintain low post position, right? And he was an absolute weapon on the block in terms just from a scoring standpoint there. And so much of that has to do with establishing that, fighting for that position, getting that position and playing out of that position. If you have that, then it's going to open up more things in your offense. And I know there's like the temptation when the doubles are going to come, which they're going to come to Carl, is to push yourself out to that 16-foot area, even if you're literally being pushed, but even just for the ability to make the pass, to have that skip pass, right? He saw so many of those doubles 2 years ago that he had to navigate. And I think he's rewired himself in a way to want that elbow extended position rather than block position. To be able to beat the smalls, man, you got to beat them where they don't want to be. And that's at the rim. And I think that's with strength, particularly in the lower body, to have that position to go back to being the massive post-up threat that he was. And I know that sounds kind of weird. And now that he's a power forward and all those sort of things, but we watched the playoffs. Where did Carl get the ball a lot of the time in the way that they ran offense in this? It was in at the block and unfortunately too often at the elbow extended where the Aaron Gordons, the Nicholas Batums, the, all those type of guys, that's where they want to play Cat. They don't want to play him on the block and they don't want to play him above the break from three. So play him where they don't want to be, you know, and develop your game, regather strength. We've seen him do all these things. Tap back into those things. I think lower body strength is the biggest thing for me.
Okay, let's do one more question on kind of this. There was a lot of questions. We kind of did talk about some of them, why maybe you would trade Carl instead of trade Rudy, right? Just because, again, I think a basic reasoning would be is that Carl's younger and has more value.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to, you know, if you feel like you're poor, go get the one option that gets you more assets and more money. But this would kind of be a nice way too, because we hammered this in July and August and September of 2022 when we tried to figure out, okay, this is a big experiment. How is it going to look? How is it going to work? So from at Raising Floors on Twitter, can you compare, contrast the Cat Rudy to like other two big teams in terms of like rim protection, switchability, as we just talked about punishing switches, offensive spacing and supporting cast. And then he listed like Giannis and Brooke Lopez, Al Horford and Rob Williams, Steven Adams and Triple J, And then some more older school ones like Dirk Nowitzki, Tyson Chandler, Al Horford and Embiid, Gasol and Ibaka. Some of those, I mean, those are all very different combos.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember me specifically enjoying the Al Horford, Rob Williams comp a year ago because it seemed like the most similar to what the Wolves would be doing with a spacing big and then a rim protecting big. Just brain thoughts. Like, what are you thinking now a year into it? Do any of those seem similar to what the Wolves have? And, you know, are any of those teams making, I mean, Giannis and Brooke is interesting, but Giannis is like also Giannis. Just their Anthony Edwards, right? It's like Ant and Carl had a baby. That works for them. None of those teams that I just listed or those duos really have a player like Ant. I mean, maybe Tatum, but so what are your thoughts on like those and their ability to protect the rim, switch, offensive spacing, all that stuff?
Honestly, one, and people aren't going to like this, the one that it reminds me most of is Horford and Embiid in Philly. Like, and I mean, just literally watching Philly and Boston play in this series, I've been just finding myself, think of that, and how great Horford has been and how great Embiid has been and how they're doing it on opposite teams and how they could not do that together in Philadelphia. It would have been interesting to like have seen that get a little bit more rope, right? To the idea, like, I wish we would have seen year two or year three of Horford and Embiid, right? That would have been such an interesting anecdote to use here in the Cat and Rudy thing. Year one of Horford and Embiid looked like year one of Cat and Rudy to me. And so then it kind of breaks down there because now we're going into year two. And yeah, the Giannis and Brooke one was the aspirational one, right? And the biggest difference was Giannis's ability to be the four, that low man, to come over the rim protector in ways that Carl can't do, much like obviously Giannis can't shoot like Carl. Carl can't do defensively those things. So from the double big alignment, it doesn't work that great to me. And I think like the next step, and this one isn't listed on there, I think like the next step is like the Jared Allen and Evan Mobley type one, where like, right, those two clearly after that Knicks series, they need to up their physicality, right? But we saw them, like they looked like another year into the process, still not all the way there, right? They lack physicality and that hurts them in that series. And I think, again, if the Wolves are in the playoffs next year, the hope is that isn't what happens. But right, as we sit here right now, having watched that the Wolves struggle to rebound and struggle to be physical, I think the aspiration is next step is Mobley and Allen, but stronger and more offense and a significantly more dynamic offensive weapon. The Horford and Williams one, it just, again, thinking about that and watching these Philly Boston games, it's just such a unique one given the players that they surround them with, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's just like.
The reason I like that one is because. That it even
the best one.
well, right, but it also of all those other combos we talked about, even going back to like a Dirk and Tyson Chandler, right? Because there's been a lot of I don't know if we've been making those, but like Carl and Dirk comps, right? And Tyson Chandler and Rudy Gobert. Mm-hmm. Well, none of those other older comps, the Gasol and Ibaka stuff, like had what the Wolves have, and like an Anthony Edwards kind of Jaden McDaniels, and that's why I like the Celtics one is because they have this two big kind of combo, but then they also have this foundational. Maybe the best wing pairing in the league in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. So that's why it's like, well, that's about as similar as it gets to what Minnesota's trying to do until you actually kind of play it out on paper. And it's like, actually, it doesn't look like what Boston's doing.
It's also like, and Grant, it's been weird with Williams, right? That he's been like in and out of lineup these past 2 years. So they haven't, again, they haven't really sustained a double big identity over the course of a season. I think, I don't know what the numbers are off the top of my head, but watching that series, those guys are pretty staggered to my eye. Like, I don't feel like they're playing a ton together. And so maybe that's, again, part of the step with Cat and Rudy. Like, you stagger a lot and you find identities throughout the stagger as the Celtics have. And obviously, like, the top of the pyramid is being able to put it all together and close games with that or be able to play both of the bigs together. But it's just, I mean, obvious statement, it's getting significantly harder across the board to be able to do two bigs, period. I mean, and that is just becoming, has become increasingly apparent in round two, you know, of the playoffs. The Warriors Lakers series, it's like, man, it's hard to play Looney and Draymond together, right? And that's apples and oranges. Those are two non-shooters. Obviously, Kat is a great shooter, but man, it, like, there isn't a great example of how it will work. And if it does work, it will work because Kat and Rudy are so great at what they're great at, and no two bigs have been put together in that sort of way that there even is really an example of it. So it doesn't mean it's impossible. I just, having watched this for a year, I just don't know which one to point to that's like, this is the great one that it can be. I don't know.
Just to clean up something, I am on the record now saying that Al Horford and Rob Williams is like the ideal one. Rob Williams hasn't started a single game against the Sixers. So for us to be like, oh, that double big, they actually don't run a double big.
They play Horford against the Warriors in the finals last year, though, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, that's true. Yeah. I think that's a really good thing, though. I think that's a really good way to segue to my final question for part one. Part two, by the way, is loaded. We might have to go to part four. But you said, and I really respect, we're friends, but I also respect you. I respect Brett. I respect the fact that you're at all these games and you see it up close, just as much as like any fan that watches all 82 games. And you said in your mind right now, you don't think the double big thing works. So I want to circle back because I like this question. It's from my guy, Jarrett in Dilworth, Minnesota. He's a farmer with his dad. He somehow found my work email. So as I'm switching jobs, it was like one of the last emails I received at my work email. But it's an interesting topic, and I want to get your opinion here before we close out. Is it possible that we, as a collective, Wolves fans, media, whatever, are being too harsh on Tim Connelly's vision after one season as GM/president?
Absolutely. And I loved his, give his analogy. I love the analogy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let me study. Okay. He's saying, are you talking about the ship?
Yeah.
Okay. He goes, yeah, but I think being a general manager in the NBA, even though I've never done it, must be something like being the rudder of a ship, a really big ship. You can make changes, drastic changes, but it takes a long time for them to take effect. It takes an even longer time to get the direction you want to go. And it takes an even longer time to reach the destination. What I'm saying is, I think Tim Connelly is a smart person. I think he was probably pressured by outside forces, maybe ownership, to make a splash. But I don't think he puts his career on the line if he doesn't believe in it. And I think that's a real, I mean, the ship one, I'm
that's money.
A sucker for a good analogy, but.
Yes, you are.
It is something that I try to think about because it's clear. We're very locked into our replies or, you know, the comments we see. Everyone is out on this after year one, and I'm not saying you're wrong by any means. I think you have a lot of data to show this doesn't work. You just said it. Like, I'm not sure this is going to work. But I also think, too, that this idea of time, and we'll get into this a little more maybe in part two with consistency, I do think that the best teams right now in the league, like, need a little time to just gel and figure it out. And no one, I don't want to hear how many games Carl missed this season because it sounds like an excuse, but it's also a real data point.
Yeah.
That him and Rudy have played, you know, the same amount of games so far as, like, I don't know, Vando and LeBron, right? Like, there's only so much that we've been able to gather. And that's what makes the season more frustrating than I think anything else is just, we went through all these roller coasters and we don't even know what we don't know. So I do think it's possible that we're being too harsh on him. I also think that he didn't, you know, he came in firing and it sounds like a miss so far, a really expensive miss. But that's why I always go back to, I don't think this team is all in. I just think they're pot committed and they're heavily pot committed. But you saw, I really, again, man, thought that Mike Conley D'Lo swap, even though D'Lo's been looking good, was such a win of a trade to get what you need in a stopgap point guard, a young player, draft capital. Like, if you can do more of those things than you do big dynamic splash moves like the Rudy Gobert thing, I think Tim Connelly can figure it out and make it work. But I'm curious. I'll throw it back to you. Like, do you agree? Like, is it possible that we're being a little too harsh here?
Yeah. Well, it's the idea is that if it does work, it is going to take a long time. That's why the analogy rules. Like, it will take a long time to take effect, and it will take a while to even start going in the direction you want to go. It will take even longer to get to the destination. The messed up thing is we are so impatient in this day and age in terms of building teams and where they are or are not going to go, right? And to some extent, it's fair to be. It is fair, the people who have concerns, and I lump myself into that in a major way, of, you know, if the ship is turning and it takes a long time to turn and we're not even sure it's aimed at the destination, that's scary given the ant variable. Both things can be true. That's how I feel. That is how I feel. Both. I am scared of the idea that if they are turning the ship in a direction that takes years to turn, that you might lose some critical ant time.
Yet at the same,
at the same time, it's like, if this ever was going to work, it was going to take longer. And it's a great reminder from Jarrett, right? Who said that, of like, and you know, I certainly pick a lot at what Finch and Conley have said over the course of the year, you know, on the record, and some of that is fair, but they did say too that, you know, there was going to be choppiness to it, and there was other things that made it even more choppy, obviously the injuries, illnesses, all that sort of stuff. But it is the glass half full view, and there is for sure water in the cup, right? Like, it is the glass,
yeah.
The glass that there is merit to that stance. And it would be a hell of a lot, to go full circle with this, it'd be a hell of a lot easier to believe in Tim Conley captaining the ship if he would tell us he's going to captain the ship. And that
Bingo.
Is not happening right
Bingo.
Now.
Bingo.
So,
and it goes back to why I was frustrated at the top and why I rambled with Phil the other day. It's because when you bring in Tim Conley or you go look at other GMs, what we do is we look at them like their Basketball Reference. We say, what transactions have they made? Mm-hmm. Tim Conley drafted Nikola Jokic. It's like, okay, well, there's a lot of context that goes into all of that. He drafted him in the second round. He passed, you know, like, could have drafted him in the first round. But there's other things that go into that role. And that's the stuff that you see a lot more, I think, than others. It's like the relationships behind the scenes, right? Like him, you know, hugging Ant and walking down the hall, like the relationships with executives, with agents, all that stuff. So that's the things that I hear that are like Tim's really, really good at. And what frustrated me about the Chad Hartman stuff, to bring it full circle, like you said, and close this one out, that's also part of the job. If you go big game hunting to get a top five exec, you want that person to literally be the voice box for your organization. And you can't, you know, go ghost people all season, right? Like, you need to be out there. Again, I've always kind of harkened back to the late, great Flip Saunders. He was probably a little too transparent. He was a little more like me. Like, he'll tell you what he's eating, what he's wearing. He'll show you the draft board or whatever on a Friday KFan call. But I don't want that. But I do want, when times are tough or when there is a players only meeting or Kyle Anderson and Rudy Gobert fighting, like, to step out in front of it. That is part of your job. You are supposed to be, for better or worse, kind of a meat shield of protecting your brand and your organization. And that's where I think he dropped the ball with Chad Hartman. And that's where I think, if he is staying and it is true that he's not interested in going anywhere else, that would be something that I hope he works on just as much as this roster, is because this fan base deserves transparency. Any fan base does, but this one specifically deserves to know at least the things that we should know. Like, who is going to work here? Who is going to show up? Who is, you know, injured? Who's not injured?
I think that's a great place to wrap it up, Kyle. We, as predicted, did not get to as many things as we wanted to, and this went longer than I thought it would too. But I'm glad we're doing two parts of it, because there's a lot of other good questions, a lot of different topics that we haven't hit on. So you and I are going to reconvene later this evening to put this part two together, and that'll come out, I think, on Wednesday morning. So he's Kyle Tighe. Follow him on Twitter at Kyle Tighe, and listen to him over at Flagrant Howls. I was going to say Flagrant North. That'd be an interesting one. Maybe we should agree.
That's my next pod, yeah. It's just about, like, the just Duluth and travel activities up there.
We will be back for part two with Kyle. And, yeah, until then, he's Kyle. I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever